We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
In the pace with Alex and Fauci, Alex and Fauci, Alex and Alex. If I put our jacks in the paint, how you gonna stop me? How you gonna stop me? How we can go head to head. Call out your top three, call out your top three. Look at the switch from Duarte. Now that boy got three. We got Haliburton running point. This is the Benedict for the shot. If anybody gonna come in the post, then we got Jalen Smith for the block. Setting the pace, going to the top. Setting the pace, going to the top. This is your number one podcast. Sweeping every team, we gonna need a mop.
What is going on, Pacer Nation? Hope y'all are having a great day. I hope you guys are doing better than the Indiana Pacers, who are on a 7-game losing streak. Joining me is my good friend, the one and only Michael J. Fauci. Fauci, what's going on, brother?
Hey, nothing much. I'm with you, though. Alex, I took a long, hard look in the mirror this weekend, and, you know, sure, my hair might not have been done, but it wasn't a pretty sight, all right? And I'm talking about these Indiana Pacers, because a 7-game losing streak will have you reevaluating things, and coming into the year, we thought we might go through these certain patches, you know, rough stretches, but actually being in it, man, that's a whole other thing. This team right now is, it's just flat out not fun without Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, it's funny because we recorded Friday night before the Pacers played the Nuggets, and I released that Saturday morning or Friday evening after that Nuggets game. And at that point, we thought the Nuggets were going to be completely healthy coming into the game. We expected a loss, but we were just like, with us recording this before, we're probably going to win. It's just going to be how it is. Well, then we find out Nikola Jokic isn't playing, and I thought, oh, no. We really are about to win this game. And, I mean, not that it's, oh, no, they're going to win, but just like, oh, no, the timing of us recording the podcast, like, we're going to look terrible. And then the Pacers just come out there and look flatter than flat. They look gassed. They look tired. And it was one of those things where, like, Jokic was, like, just styling over there on the bench with his white and orange and all the nice colors he had on over there. But I was just laughing because just, like, the Pacers, no matter what they tried, like, they just couldn't come back. And it was just, like, felt like a repeat performance from what they did against OKC, where they just didn't really have any answer for this Nuggets team. And we know the Nuggets are one of the best teams in the Western Conference, so there's no doubt about it. We expected a loss, but just the lack of effort in this game, Fauci, was just awful. And then you flip it over to Saturday, back-to-back, which we already thought was kind of like a scheduled loss going against Phoenix. What if I told you, like, 7 of the top 9 guys for Phoenix didn't play in this game, and the Pacers still lost this game? That it's just when it rains, it pours right now. And, yes, they do miss Haliburton, but there's a lot of other things going wrong with this team.
There really is. I mean, I'll comment on the Nuggets game first. This team right now just looks so out of sync without Tyrese Haliburton. It's just 21 turnovers against the Nuggets. I mean, the Nuggets are without, arguably, potentially, it's already back-to-back MVP, but could win it 3 straight times.
He's a favorite.
He's the favorite right now. Nuggets also without their head coach. And I know sometimes people say, oh, well, does that make that much of a difference? You're without your coach, you're without your MVP, and you still beat us by 23. It's not looking good. So against the Nuggets, that game, it never really felt like, oh, Pacers could take this one. I mean, they were led by 19 points from Bennedict Mathurin. Chris Duarte had 18, looked good in that game. But it wasn't enough. The Pacers never looked like a threat at any point. And one thing they allowed to the Nuggets that was tough to see, a season high 38 assists without Jokic, who's averaging just about 10 assists himself. And you got to remember this, just a couple games ago, the Pacers allowed 41 assists. So they're allowing teams to just get pretty much anything they want up and down the court. And when you thought that might have been enough, the Nuggets had 16 dunks in that game, the most they've had since 1996. And it's just like, come on, man. Across the board, it didn't matter who was out there, who wasn't out there. Jamal Murray getting his first career triple-double. It's just they got anything they wanted, and it was a tough sight for the Pacers and what we already knew was going to be, you know, a really large obstacle to overcome.
Yeah, all of the Nuggets starters were a plus for the game, and they were plus double digits. And then Christian Brown and Bruce Brown off the bench were plus double digits. And then DeAndre Jordan, a plus six, okay? So when DeAndre Jordan is a positive and a plus-minus box score, and he only played 18 minutes. So he actually played 18 minutes this game. I thought it was interesting. Aaron Gordon was playing center in this game, and I thought that he kind of had his way with Miles Turner a little bit in this one. And, you know, I think part of it is just because he's a lot quicker off of the dribble. Yes. And so Turner, while he's a great rim protector, his perimeter defense, it's okay, but it's got a lot of work to do. So I just felt like in this game, Fauci, like Jamal Murray, like you said, getting his first career triple-double, Bruce Brown, I mean, he was just a nice spark off the bench. But Christian Brown was the guy that really surprised me because the athleticism that he has, I think it's kind of forgotten. Like, you don't expect him to be that athletic, and he's just hopping off the ground, making some, you know, big dunks there on a back door. I'm like, okay. But Bruce Brown and Chris Duarte getting into it a little bit, I told you a couple episodes ago, we know that Chris Duarte's got a little fire to him. He's got a little, you know, punching or slapping that chair when he was walking out after the injury. Like, that's just Duarte, man. He was ticked in that game. I liked the fire from him, but at the end of the day, I was just like, I wish this mattered. I wish we weren't down by 25 when you're getting this upset.
I know, and I stand by it. That chair was in the wrong place at the wrong time facing Chris Duarte. But no, look, I put out a tweet that Duarte was going through a stretch where over a three-game span, he was averaging about 15 points per game on really positive shooting splits. I know that was not really the case against Phoenix, unfortunately, but that Nuggets game, one that you want to forget about, and yes, Jokic wasn't out there. The Nuggets are still a really good team, so I didn't have high expectations. The Pacers did make a move to put O'Shea Brissett in the starting lineup. Mathurin back to the bench. You could see Carlisle's experimenting. He's trying. It feels like a new starting five is being trotted out there all the time, but neither has worked. In the absence of Haliburton right now, it's fans are crossing over to wanting to be sellers at what feels like a record pace. The problem is that Phoenix game left a real sour taste in my mouth because it was very reminiscent of the Brooklyn Nets not putting out their top seven players, us thinking we'll get a win, and then falling short over there. Phoenix had, it was Mikal Bridges out there. And everyone else, that was it. And the fact that the Pacers could not get a much-needed win there made me lose the confidence that they could beat anybody without Haliburton. I just don't see a win without Haliburton.
I mean, I was just laughing at Rick Carlisle in the press conference when he said Josh Okogie got to the foul line like 9 times or something like that. Or no, he was 11 of 15 from the free throw line. He said, that's a bit ridiculous.
I mean, I don't blame him. He's right.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, Josh Okogie was their leading scorer with 24 points off the bench. And it's like he played 34 minutes. And it's like every time the Pacers got within range to like maybe make a run or close the gap or whatever, the Suns would just hit big buckets. I think the end of the third quarter, Carlisle talked about that, was just a brutal end to that third quarter because they had just, I think it was 81-80 at one point. And then like the Suns went on a nice little run there to end the third quarter. But yeah, you talk about the players that didn't play. So I was hoping to see DeAndre Ayton in this game just to see how Turner matched up against him. Well, he didn't play. Cameron Johnson didn't play. Devin Booker didn't play. Chris Paul didn't play. Landry Shamet didn't play. Cameron Payne didn't play.
Cameron
Johnson earlier. I think I said him. But yeah, the man. One guy that's not been playing all year, but I think, you know, you got to remember he's on the roster still, Jay Crowder.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was on the roster, like, he definitely would have been, you know, a top seven guy from their team this year. So just like, okay, everybody is out and we still lost this game. And the Suns have not been playing well at all. So they had got a win previously to that game, but they had lost like a ton of games before that. So you're thinking to yourself, this is a good chance for them to get back on, you know, the winning track. But second night of a back-to-back after playing in altitude against Denver, I kind of understand it, but at the same time, just another bad loss. And seven in a row, it's just piling up, like you said. And fans are starting to have a change of opinion on what this team is and what this team should do moving forward. But, you know, I just think, you know, we obviously know Andrew Nembhard was dealing with a non-COVID illness. He ended up playing in that game. He was supposed to be on a podcast with us today, actually. And he took a turn for the worse over the weekend. So hopefully he is able to play on Tuesday. We'll see how that goes. But we had to reschedule that because he's not feeling well. So, you know, get well soon, Andrew. But yeah, I just think overall, Fotch, it's just one of those things where right now it's hard to watch this Pacers team. It's not fun.
I was watching this game by myself and I was embarrassed. I was just, I started talking to myself being like, what am I doing? It's getting late. I'm an old man. Like, are we really not going to win this game against Phoenix? And the Pacers did have a chance at the end. I mean, Buddy Hield had a look at a three-pointer with 2 seconds left, would have tied it. And, you know, we did breeze over. TJ McConnell did put the team on his back. McConnell played 39 minutes, delivered a
triple. He did start that game, too.
He started, and he made the most of those minutes. 18 points, 10 rebounds, 12 assists. McConnell was the bright spot in that game. I know Mathurin had 23 points. 11 of it came from the free throw line. Struggled shooting, 6 of 17. But McConnell has just been on fire lately. So I know the outcome was horrendous, but got to tip your hat to the play of TJ McConnell.
No, and I think McConnell's been good this entire, you know, losing streak. That's the bad thing. It's like you're getting the best McConnell basketball, but nobody else is stepping up. Like, there's been a lot of, like, comments on social media recently talking about, well, Miles hasn't played great without Halliburton, Miles this, you know. I'll just put it this way. We know Miles is not a self-creator. Miles is dependent upon other people creating for him. That's just his game. Like, he's a three-point shooter, and he's going to, you know, roll occasionally and get the ball down low in the post, but he's not like a guy that's just going to take you off the dribble. It's not really what he does. I mean, that's not his role. So, personally, I think Miles has been fine. I think he's been okay. I don't think he's been great. We've obviously seen better versions of Miles throughout the year, but I thought he was good against the Bucks. He didn't play good against the Thunder. He was frustrated. I think he was frustrated after the Nuggets game as well. I mean, you got to understand, like, at least his frustration shows that he cares. So
yeah, of course,
you know, and I mean, look, it's just been a rough stretch for everybody. This team right now, it feels a lot like last year. And I know that the front office talked about it, like, losing a bunch of games in a row is just not what you really want. Even if you are, like, not expecting to win a lot of games, losing like 10 games in a row can really impact the morale of the team. And so getting home for the Bulls game on Tuesday is going to be huge, just to be back in front of their fans. But the Bulls have been playing better. The Bulls are right on their tails to take over the ninth seed. And I think right now, Flatchy, the Pacers just have to gut a win out. You can't look at Orlando and say this is a cakewalk either, because Orlando, they got Jonathan Isaac back, coming back. They've been playing better. I just, you know, when is the next win in sight? I don't know, but they just got to stay together.
We are officially at the point in the season where there is not an easy win. There's not. I don't think there's one game at this point that we could pencil in saying, I guarantee the Pacers win this game. Because I saw an article out. This is the most disparity there's been between in the NBA this year since 1984. Anyone could win. There's only a handful of teams that are pretty bad. Everyone else, for the most part, is kind of in it. You know,
let's throw this out at you real quick. I think when I looked last night, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is right. Only 13 teams had a above 500 record or better in the NBA. Let me double check that, though.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll go on while you research that. But the Pacers, it's just, man, you got Chicago, Orlando, Milwaukee, and Memphis all before Tyrese Halliburton comes back. If you don't win against Chicago at home or Orlando, I mean, you ain't beat Milwaukee or Memphis, even if they rest a player or two. We just lost to Milwaukee without Giannis, without Middleton. They're expected to be back, or at least obviously Giannis is. So, man, it's tough because then after that, you're talking about the Lakers, the Kings, Cleveland, Miami, Phoenix. And things are getting ugly real quick. And to your point about how losses adding up can change your mood, I've been on teams when you're winning, it's fun. Guys want to put in that extra work and show up. When you're on teams that are losing, and yes, I'm talking about, you know, recreational basketball, some guys stop showing up. Hey, you know what? This has been fun. I got some other obligations going on. The Pacers obviously are under contract. They're not going to just not show up, but it's going to wear on them. Losing does affect your day-to-day, and I don't want this group to be a part of it, but I hope it's not already kind of seeping in there to the point where you got the Chris Duartes that are getting really frustrated right now, and I don't want to see that out of other players. We need Halliburton's smile back because that has been infectious.
Yeah, for sure. Let me just correct myself here, Fauci. So before, it was 13 teams that had a record above 500. The Clippers won last night. I think the Timberwolves won over the weekend as well. And so now that puts it at a total of 16 teams because the Suns got their victory against us. 16 teams have a record of 500 or greater, but I think like three of them are at 500 as well, or two of them are at 500. So that'd be 14 teams only with above 500 records. And nobody really is looking to run away with it besides, like, you know, you're looking at your upper echelon teams like the Celtics. They're at 35 wins, and then Denver and Memphis are in the 30s. And Philadelphia just got their 30th win. They took over one spot of the Bucks. So, yeah, I just think about it like that. Like, there's a lot of parity in this league. I looked at the strength of schedule today. Pacers at 22, so they don't have that tough of a schedule remaining. But like you said, it's still – that doesn't mean anything. And the teams below them that have an easier strength of schedule, the Wizards, the Toronto Raptors, and the Chicago Bulls, all teams that are nipping on their heels – for that final 9 and 10 spot in the play-in. So they're just going to have to figure things out. Halliburton might not come back till February. And like I said last episode, if Miles Turner is not there when Halliburton returns, or he's only there for a couple of games, and if he's traded before the deadline, I just don't see an end in sight to the madness of the losing.
I don't either. And it feels too late to get to the top of the lottery standings, like really being in contention for.
I don't think it is.
It's not too late if things aren't going to get really dark out here, but we're in the midst of a pretty pitch black stretch of Pacer basketball where I just don't know when the next win is going to come. I feel that I'm dealing all right with it, but man, Pacers Twitter, it's becoming a spot that they want to turn to the tank real quick. And I can't say I blame them. I really cannot. But this team just looks night and day with Tyrese Halliburton. When he's not out there, I don't know who we can beat. I really don't know who in the NBA we can beat without that man, because ain't no team that I could definitely say, oh, that's a lock. The Pacers will beat them. I mean, Houston Rockets, I think, could even give you a challenge on any night without Halliburton. The Spurs, there's just not a team out there.
I don't know about the Rockets. Rockets only won 10 games this year, Fauci. They're just trash.
They are trash, but you never know if, like, Jalen Green might give you a 30-piece or anything. That's the one team that I'd feel kind of good about. I mean, I think they've lost.
The way the Pacers are playing, though, I get what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's it. And that's not the category you want to be in. The Rockets have been the worst team in the league over the last, like, 3 years.
Yeah, so just to kind of give you like an update here, the Rockets are the worst team in the league. Detroit's the second worst team. This is inverse standing. Charlotte third, San Antonio fourth, Orlando fifth. Washington has the sixth worst record in the NBA, and we are only 2 games ahead of them. So we could go all the way to the sixth spot in the draft. We were at 5 last year, and 6 jumped us, which was the Sacramento Kings. So we're not that far away from being, like you said, at the top of the lottery. And in Orlando, we're only 5 games ahead of them record-wise, and their team's getting healthy. They're getting better. Maybe they look at developing, you know, some of their young players and letting them play and win games. I mean, you just never know. So, I mean, because they got a pretty young team. I don't know how much they really want to add another young piece. I mean, obviously they would love to do that, but You get what I'm saying? Like, are they looking at maybe like not tanking and just letting their guys play and develop and see what they got? So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that we can get in the top seven, six or seven, and, you know, position ourselves for a good draft pick. But yeah, it's just tough. And I mean, nobody wants to sit here and be all doom and gloom for the rest of the season. We still got all of February and March, and then, you know, the rest of January and the beginning of April. So we still got ourselves a while, but I just think a lot's going to happen in the next 2.5 weeks before the trade deadline. We're going to kind of see what direction this team goes, Fotch. But, you know, anything else you want to talk about on these games that we had over the weekend, or you want to move forward to our next part?
Not really a game, but I mean, when you're talking about a battle of two teams that might be tanking, Alex, I don't know if this is good news or bad news or not, but February 11th, I'm making my return to Washington, D.C. I'm hitting Pacers versus Wizards. And I don't know what team needs a
Wizard. We know what team you're rooting for, Fauci.
Yeah, right. I don't know what
the team Wizards
needs a win or loss more, but I will be in the building. The Pacers are 0-3 with me in the arena this year. I don't feel good about that. Part of me needs that streak to end. But I do know at that point, it's right after the NBA trade deadline.
So what are you
right
pulling
after
for?
It? So I'm just saying, I don't know who the Pacers are going to be putting out there. Mm. If this is like, this could be the game after the trade deadline where the Pacers could be kind of undermanned, which already feels like a tough spot to be in. If the Pacers are to trade Turner, obviously Turner won't be out there. And who else? You never know. Last year, right after the trade deadline, I mean, it was slim picking for a couple games before Halliburton made it.
Tristan Thompson, baby.
Just don't. I still just don't like him. I don't do it. I can't do it.
No, what's going to happen is, Fauci, is if Turner's not on the team, you're going to get the Daniel Tice debut in Washington, D.C. The guy that you said would never wear a Pacers uniform, you're going to be there for that debut. I'm calling it right now.
I might. You know what? It very well could happen. Maybe Tice is the next guy to go off while I'm there. It tends to be someone. I would prefer not to be at the Daniel Tice game. Like, it would be kind of cooler if someone else stepped up. But you take what you can get. I'll be in the building, win or loss. I'm still hoping for a win.
Okay. Which win? He didn't specify which team
Pacers
he wants to win, though.
Win. All right. You're not going to get me on some technicality.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, okay. So
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
So speaking of the Washington Wizards, today they made a trade, Fauci. Rui Hachimura, a guy that I brought up that I like for this Pacers team to be kind of, you know, semi-interested in, take a flyer
I'm
on.
With you.
He got dealt today to the Los Angeles Lakers for Kendrick Nunn, and I believe it was 3 second-round picks? Or was it four?
It was three.
It was three.
It was the Chicago Bulls second-round pick for this year. Then you're talking about a 2028 and a 2029 second-round pick. So, I mean, I truly believe Rob Pelinka, the front office, might have dipped their hand in their couch, saw what they could pulled out a little bit of pocket change, offered the Wizards it, and they went for it. Alex, what were your initial thoughts when you're talking about Kendrick Nunn, someone going to hit free agency, and then 3 second round picks for the former 9th overall pick. Yes, he is heading towards restricted free agency, but still a promising young player.
Yeah, I think because the second round picks are so far out, it is kind of enticing, I think, a little bit to the Wizards, because that does give them flexibility to, you know, because we've seen the Pacers use those type of picks to move up and get what they want. So you could say, well, there's a guy you really like, now you have that ammo in your back pocket, because second round picks get traded all the time. I guarantee those picks are traded 5 or 6 times before they eventually land with whoever gets them. But I think in terms of the value for Rui Hachimura, it was just so low. And Kendrick Nunn is not going to be someone I think that the Wizards really prioritize keeping. They already have point guards on their roster, and maybe he plays backup point guard, who knows. But I just feel like if the Pacers had any interest, they could have offered easily more than what the Lakers gave up to get him. So clearly the Pacers probably just didn't have interest in him. That's kind of my thinking on this one. But I think if they did, you could have easily just said, okay, we'll give you that Rockets second round pick, or we'll give you the Celtics, you know, pick plus Goga, and take back Rui Hachimura. And that would have been a better overall trade value deal than what the Lakers gave. Now, some people might say that these second round picks have more value than that Celtics pick. I can kind of see that, but I just feel like that maybe could have, the Pacers could have given up a little bit more to get him and probably outdone the Lakers in terms of their value. But I don't know, Foch. I was just a little bit surprised that that's all it cost to get Rui.
And that's where I'm at, is my theory on this had to have been that the Pacers were not interested. Yeah. Otherwise, this was the perfect deal to swoop in on and offer up the Celtics first-round pick and Goga, like you said, and call it a day. Because from everything I've read, Washington wanted to get below the tax by being able to flip Kendrick Nunn for Rui. They saved it's about $1 million. I don't think that an NBA franchise should be too concerned about $1 million, but it gets them just below that. Then you're talking about 3 second-round picks. Don't know what they'll materialize as. We won't know that for about 5 to 6 years. But I'm with you. You're talking about the Celtics first-round pick, which could be potentially 30th overall, maybe 28th to 30. And Goga, I think the Wizards could have still accomplished saving money. They get a first. I think that would have been a better deal. My gut theory, Pacers just weren't interested. Yeah. They probably thought to themselves, you know what? I don't know if Rui is someone that we want to trade a first-round pick for now, when maybe he does end up hitting free agency. They also, I mean, if you look at it this way, Lakers are probably far less likely to re-sign Rui due to where they're at financially. The Pacers could probably just offer him, you know, an offer if they are interested and not keep, not trade a first-round pick.
Is he a restricted free agent this year?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe that's when the Pacers were just not interested in, was, you know, having to pay him after this season, don't want to give up a first-round pick for him. I mean, I can kind of understand that. I thought a flyer on Rui would have made sense, because I still believe Rui has good basketball in him. But last year was kind of weird. Like, he didn't play for, like, half the season, right?
I know. And they never really did disclose what was going on. I know it was personal, so it could have been some type of mental health-related thing where he was away from the team for quite some time. And he obviously has not blossomed the way that people thought he would, but I love nothing more than a buy low player that you're rolling the dice on. I love it. I live for it. The Pacers have done a great job developing young talent. I mean, I could have seen Rui as like an Aaron Nesmith type of development where you get the most out of him. I don't know how much development he'll have in LA, but unless the Pacers were going to move someone at the power forward spot, I don't know if they would have been able to open up enough minutes to have Rui develop and then give him a contract on top of that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what you're seeing here for Rui, you're probably going to see less value for a guy like Cam Reddish. So
apparently that's down to just a second round pick.
Right. And that's what the Lakers were interested in him as well. So you got to wonder, maybe the Lakers are going to try to get Cam Reddish and Rui Hachimura and kind of get some young guys on this team that, you know, could maybe make some sense for him. But speaking of 2028 second round picks, like you said, the Lakers gave up, right? Bobby Marks from ESPN did his entire trade guide and, you know, just picked up the things from the Pacers that I thought were interesting. And so he threw out 4 different trade scenarios, Focci, for the Pacers. So I just want to like run these by you and just kind of get your opinions on them. So the first one we're going to do here does involve a 2028 second round pick from the Pacers that's protected 31-35 to the Phoenix Suns for cash considerations and Dario Saric. What were your thoughts on that?
My first initial instinct is why? why would this trade make any sense? Because you look at Saric, and it's like, this is someone who's going to enter free agency, and we're going to trade a future second-round pick for it, and we're going to get cash. It just doesn't make any sense. And I believe in the article, it said the Pacers would have to look to waive someone. And I could have sworn that it mentioned James Johnson in the article. Yeah, I could be wrong. That makes no sense to waive a locker room leader for someone like Saric, who's not going to be there after the year. I'm out on it.
Yeah, this is kind of a win now move, I think. And I think when Bobby Marks was probably creating this, the Pacers were doing a lot better. They weren't on a 7-game losing streak. And I think it came out maybe last week at some point, like Tuesday or Wednesday, Thursday, mm-hmm. one of those days. He released both the Eastern and Western Conference on separate days, but Eastern Conference one came out first. I like Dario Saric. I think that last year he missed most of the season, all of it. I can't remember. He had
a torn ACL.
Okay. And I think that might have happened in the previous year. So mm-hmm. Can't keep track of what the Suns were doing, but we've had so much history with the Suns. I just feel like at this point, after the Ayton thing, them taking Dwayne Washington Jr. from us after we waived him to have the money to have Ayton, it's just like, no, we're probably not going to see any Pacers-Suns deals anytime soon. We already blasted them for the TJ Warren deal for cash consideration. So I get it. I mean, if I'm the Suns, I'm staying away from Kevin Pritchard. I'm like, this dude has just not been helping me out at all. Even though James Jones does have ties with Indiana, obviously playing here. No, mm-hmm. I thought this deal was kind of interesting in terms of like, okay, like it does help us reach our salary floor probably if we do add on Dario Saric, because we would be taking back the money, which is something I think people care about. I don't think the ownership cares about it as much because they can just give the money out to the players that they have to reach a salary floor with. But yeah, you give up a protected 2028 second round pick, doesn't really matter. You get cash considerations for it. You get Dario Saric. It's just not doing anything for me.
When people use the example, make a trade just to make a trade, this is that example right there. This makes just no sense. If the Pacers really hadn't gone on this 7-game losing streak, you know, you could say, all right. But like, does Saric really move the needle to the point where it's like, uh-oh, watch out, Pacers about to lock down a playoff spot? I don't think he's that guy anymore. A few years ago, I did really like him with the Philadelphia 76ers, but coming off of a torn ACL after he missed all of last year, I just confirmed it was last year, full year missed.
Okay.
He's just not that guy, and I think it doesn't make sense to do that deal.
I mean, he didn't look good against Pacers on Saturday night. I think he played like 8 minutes even though he started. So it's just kind of like, okay, the idea of Dario Saric is probably more enticing than who Dario mm-hmm. Saric is right now after the surgery, and it could be a cost-saving move for the Suns for them to do this, and that might be why. So that's probably why. Okay, Indiana's got cap space. Well, we'll give them some cash considerations to take this on. But at the same time, why should we be giving up a second-round pick for it if that's the case? You should be attaching a second-round pick to us or to Saric for us to take him. That's kind of how I look at it. And maybe we give them like a lesser second-round pick and kind of like have the rights to a better second-round pick from the deal. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason to do it because we already have such a logjam at that position because he's kind of like a small ball five. He's not really a power forward in the way Carlisle likes to play. I mean, defensively, that's where you got to get better. And Saric is not someone that I look at as a good defender.
No, but what's cash considerations to a team $15 million below the floor? I mean, it makes no sense at all. If we're doing a deal with Phoenix, I want to be the one throwing in the cash considerations like we did for TJ Warren.
Absolutely. Well, let's move over to the next one here. And these are kind of – I'll do these two together. Excuse me, I can't talk. But I feel it's only right that I bring this one up because PJ Washington, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, boy.
That's my boy. So it's nice to not hear me have to say it, but somebody else coming up with a Pacers trade idea. PJ Washington to the Pacers for a 2023 first round draft pick from the Celtics and the pick from the Cavs for 2023 as well. So basically giving up two late first round picks for PJ Washington. Fachi, we'll start with that trade first. What do you think of that one?
I'm torn because the other deal, it's hard to not spoil that deal.
I'm going to go ahead and say it.
Yeah, just say
okay.
It.
So the other deal, instead of doing both picks, the Pacers would then give them the Cavs pick, but instead of the Celtics pick, they would include Chris Duarte in the trade. So Chris Duarte and the Cavs pick for PJ Washington, or the Boston pick, the Cavs pick for PJ Washington. No players are going out.
I think I'm leaning towards the first deal involving two first-round picks where you get to keep Chris Duarte.
Yeah.
Now, you could go either way on this one. You really could. But I think that the Pacers don't need to punt on Duarte yet. But when you're talking about having three first-round picks and the Houston Rockets' early second-round pick most likely, it feels that that's too many first-round picks. So I would rather still keep Duarte, hope that maybe he could develop into something, and then give up the Cavs and Celtics picks, which could easily be between 25 to 30, where it's kind of a lower chance that you're going to get someone that's really going to make an impact with this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I like PJ Washington. You know how I like him. I've thought that it makes some sense to maybe go after him, because if you really like him, you're going to have his bird rights. It's restricted free agency, so you can bring him back. Is he worth giving up two picks, though, for?
I don't think so. It was more of like a between those two deals. If I had to pick one, I'd rather give up the two late picks than Duarte and a pick. But the Pacers could very well just pursue him in restricted free agency.
Right, they could do that. And you got to think you're really helping out the Hornets if you give them two picks in this year's draft. They're already towards the top three in terms of the draft lottery right now. So now you're just giving another team in the Eastern Conference more ammunition to try to get up into the draft and make some bigger, splashier moves, because this is a team that feels like they need to hit the major reset button and build around LaMelo Ball. And I believe Jake Fisher, in one of his recent articles, did point that out. That's what direction they look to be heading. So I like what Charlotte has in terms of, you know, their assets with young players. Like we talked about McDaniels being somebody we liked. I know I've talked about it. PJ Washington. I don't believe in Kelly Oubre Jr. I'm just not a big Kelly Oubre Jr. believer, but they do have veterans they could sell off of, like Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier, those kind of guys. There's been rumored interest in Miles Bridges coming back with them, and that kind of got debunked. I think once they got all the negative responses back on social media, they were like, okay, we probably need to dip on this one. But there definitely was some interest there, I believe, in that. So just not really sure what direction the Hornets are going to go after this season. I think this year it makes sense that they're trying to lose. But PJ Washington, as much as I like him, that's a lot of assets you're giving up, because now you only have your pick in the draft. No opportunity to move up. Kevin Pritchard's talked about, you know, he loves those picks. I think where it could make sense is if you did do that Cavs pick, but maybe a future second-round pick instead, because that's just a lot of, you know, valuable things you're giving up to have the opportunity to pay somebody money. It's like, why do I want the opportunity to pay him when I could just, like you said, approach that in restricted free agency? Yeah, you get his bird rights, but now you're locking yourself up with even more money tied to a guy that is still, in my opinion, a project.
I'm with you. So I don't think someone is paying up two first-round picks for PJ Washington.
No.
I just don't think so. Good, promising player. I think he has taken a step forward this year. But once restricted free agency comes around, I got no problem just offering up a deal, keeping those picks. Because if you're Indiana, you have now done things right. You've accumulated enough assets to be able to take those picks and swing for the fences. Swinging for PJ Washington is not swinging for the fences. That's like swinging for a double. You know, I feel like right over there, that's more of a double. I'm saving those picks to really go out there and swing for a guy that we could not have gotten unless it was through trade. And PJ Washington, I'm sorry, is just not that guy.
Yeah, I mean, if the Hornets are looking to get rid of one of their top draft picks from the last like 5 years, whatever it's been, I mean, come on now. That tells you enough. If they're already giving up on their guy, it just makes it feel like they're just not as invested. Why should we be as invested? But let's move on to the last one here, Fauci. This one, I think, is something that's more interesting to talk about, but we'll get into that. The Pacers receive Josh Hart from the Portland Trailblazers for TJ McConnell and Chris Duarte. What do you think on this one, Fauci?
This is tough because I've always had a soft spot for Josh Hart. In my opinion, he is the best rebounding guard in the league. And the Pacers have struggled at rebounding for so long. And I feel like it's come down to Pacers haven't had guards that have really rebounded that well in years. But once again, another guy that could decline his player option and hit free agency after this year. So let's weigh it out. McConnell, the trusty veteran that has been the bright spot, you know, following Haliburton going down, someone that you can count on, great locker room leader. We would save $14 million moving forward if the Pacers were to trade him. And then Duarte, you could obviously save on him, but it's not like he's making this money that's really holding you down, burning a hole in your pocket. So the Pacers have a chance to potentially trade both players that are in the rotation and then walk away with nothing in the offseason. It's a bit of a risky move, and I just don't think this is a great deal either.
No, I don't really like any of these deals, to be honest with you. I mean, the one that's probably the most enticing to me is the PJ Washington stuff.
Of course.
Just because, I mean, there's always that, like, what if he became this, you know? Is he kind of like a better version of, like, us getting Jalen Smith at the deadline?
Where he can be a starter. Good comparison.
But he's not been shooting the ball well, and that's kind of Jalen Smith this year. He's not been shooting the ball well either after he had a great stretch with us towards the end of the season last year. So, you know, that warm, fuzzy feeling kind of wore off there with Jalen Smith. I think that he's been fine, but I don't think anybody would be losing sleep if he was somebody that was dealt. So, long story short, Josh Hart, role player, not moving the needle. TJ McConnell is so valuable to this team right now. As much as I love Andrew Nimhardt and I believe in his potential, right now he's been struggling, and I think sometimes it's just nice to have that insurance at that point guard position. And TJ McConnell has been so good that Rick Carlisle had to put him in the starting lineup and start him next to Nimhardt and allow Nimhardt to kind of play off ball a little bit, because not only is Nimhardt asked to guard usually the best player on their team, trying to run the offense too, which is a lot. It's a lot to ask a guy. So I think McConnell is more valuable than people realize. The money getting off that, it would be nice. But seriously, McConnell's making $7 million. And like you said, $15 million, what, under the floor. So, you know, so we're not hurting for needing to create space. And then Duarte, I'm not giving up on Chris Duarte that quickly for Josh Hart. So, you know, good player, but not the right deal for me. None of these deals really scream – this is what the Pacers should do. It feels like more of the Pacers being like helpers in a lot of these trades where they're just not taking back anything that makes a lot of sense.
I think Bobby Marks missed the mark on this situation because he didn't understand where the Pacers are at. And in these trades, it just doesn't do anything for them. Long term, you're talking about still running a risk of losing just about every single player that the Pacers are trading for in this situation could easily just walk.
Yeah.
So between PJ Washington, Josh Hart, Dario Saric, those are three guys that could easily the Pacers could trade for, and then they could not be with the team the following year. Josh Hart, glorified or a real good role player, but if the Pacers punted on Duarte and TJ McConnell, locker room leader, walked away with a player that doesn't come back to the team next year, I think it would send a pretty rough message to, you know, the rest of the group, because McConnell loves being here. Duarte wants to be here. I just none of these moves. They just ain't it.
No, they don't move the needle at all. And to be honest with you, I'd rather trade 1 second round pick for Cam Reddish than any of these deals.
110%. Take a second round pick. I'll let you pick which one you want. We got plenty.
I don't know about that.
Not the Houston one. Not that one. But we got plenty of others over here. I feel like it's Halloween. I'm holding a bucket of second round picks. Just pick one, the Houston one, and we'll take Cam Reddish. We don't need to jeopardize anything for the guys that were named today.
Yeah, not at all. So, I mean, Dario Saric, Josh Hart, Godspeed to you, but don't want to see you in a Pacer uniform. But with that being said, Fauci, let's go ahead and close out the episode. Tell the people where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at SettingThePace3. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at Pacers Talk. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Yeah, you can go to youtube.com/Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast, where our latest episode is out. Fauci, Michael Scotto, one-on-one, talking NBA trade buzz. What is going on? Michael Scotto's got all the scoops for you. We did see one little clip of that aggregated for Twitter today. So thank you at the trade deadline for doing that for us. If you want to hear that whole conversation, just go over to YouTube, subscribe to our channel, listen to that video. It's really good, impactful. And then, of course, we also had our fan of the week on that episode as well. So Corey and Dia Carter, that interview with myself and Fauci, and then our fans of the week is up available as well on that episode. So check that out. But Fauci, if you're glad the Pacers are back home and playing in front of their fans and not on the road anymore, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers!
Going to the top, setting the pace, going to the top. This is your number one podcast, sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop. Smooth.